The last thing we spoke about on the top of Mem Gimel and Aleph was this Tosus Mevatel Kli Mehechano. And Tosus finds an apparent contradiction between two comments of Rashi. One is Rashi here in Perikira on Daf Membeis on Membeis, and the other is Rashi later on Daf Kuf Nun Vav, I think it is. Rashi here in our Perik says that the Kuf Nun Dalid. Rashi here says that the problem of Rav Yosef, let's just review, we have Rabba and Rav Yosef. According to Rabba, if he takes this kli and puts it under the oil, then he's violating the Iser of Ein Kli Nitol El Dovra Nitol. Whereas according to Rav Yosef, he's being Mevatel Kli Mehechano. Now, what's the problem with being Mevatel Kli Mehechano? And here we have this theory in Rashi. Rashi here says the problem is Meleches Bonah, correct, that he's attaching, it's like as if he was attaching the Kli to the ground. Let's read the Rashi again. Rashi says, Dehavi kikovelo mokom, that since he's being mevatel the hachonas hakli, it's as if he set up this kli in one specific place. It's now no longer movable. Umachabro betit, and now he attaches it to the ground. Vidami lemelacha, that would sound like meleches bonah. So Tosfos points out that's not the way Rashi has it later on, because there Rashi says mechzek is soser. By destroying the kli, because the kli is no longer movable, it's considered as if he violated meleches soser. So what do we do with these two Rashis? Is there any way of understanding why Rashi in Perikira, our Rashi here, is looking for meleches bonah, and he's not satisfied with meleches soser? Now, I want to take a break for a second in order to get back to this Rashi and try to figure out what is Rashi's opinion about binyan bekelim. Because keep in mind, our whole sugya deals with kelim. So we have the following Rashi. Okay, we have Rashi. Let me just see where it is. Mem Zayin Omer Aleph. Let's see if we can find this Rashi. Tibra Maschil Chayim. Okay, then let's see if we can find this Rashi. It's the fourth line of the wide lines. He says, Hutchiloso Vigomro. Like, so we're talking about a Mita Shel Tarsiyim. You may remember that we discussed this in the past, where he has this kind of portable bed or couch that he puts together segments piece by piece and he attaches them. And Rashi says that in this case he created the kli from the beginning to the end, and therefore chayav mishumaka bepatish. Av l'chol gomrei amalacha v'lo mishum binyan d'ein binyan b'kelim.
Rabbi, a problem, maybe I'm totally wrong. A kli like this, which is temporary in nature, is he doing anything wrong because the fact that it's so temporary?
So then we're getting into the issue of Rashi and Tosfos. Tosfos is of the opinion that it's not temporary at all, that he does what's called hiduk bechazka, meaning he attaches the different segments of the bed together.
So then it's fixed.
In a fixed way. So it's permanent and not temporary. In Rashi's frame of reference, we're not exactly sure. We know this, that Rashi holds that these segments, before you attach them together, do not have a shame kli, because they don't function as a kli. When he puts them together, he's basically created a kli. Now Rashi holds that if you create a kli, I'm going to trick you and I'm going to say Yechai Mishum Aleches Bona. But that's tricking you, because Rashi says no, he's not Chai Mishum Aleches Bona. You and I would have said, and the Ramban certainly would say, that in the case that he constructs a kli from beginning to the end, that's called Malachas Bona. Rashi surprises us and says Yechai Mishum Makav Apatish. And here Rashi activates the principle, which is a Sugyan Beitza, called Ein Binyan Bekelim. And Rashi holds Ein Binyan Bekelim Klal, meaning even in the case where you started the kli and you finished the kli, you completed the kli from beginning to end, from A to Z, you're still not Chai from Malachas Bona, because basically according to Rashi, a kli is Mufka from Moleches Bona. And therefore the only way you could be chayiv in a case of building a kli is for Makom Patish. And Rashi holds that in the case of Makom Patish, you have to take the kli all the way till the Gemar Molocha, and Gemar Molocha is Makom Patish. But my problem is the following. If we get back to our sugya here, on Daf Mem Gimel, the sugya of Rav Yosef, of being Mavatil Kli Mehechano, why does Rashi equate this with Moleches Bona? After all, we have a rule according to Rashi to Ein Binyan Bekelim, correct? Oh. Now, keep in mind that the flip side of Ein Binyan Bekelim is Ein Stira Bekelim, because Binyan and Stira go together. So if Rashi holds Ein Binyan Bekelim, then Rashi is going to also say that Ein Stira Bekelim, correct? Oh. So if that be the case, we're stuck with both Rashi here in the Sechta in Parakira and Rashi there in Parak Tolan, because in both cases Rashi is saying that being Mavatel Klive Chano is a violation of either Bona or Soser. Ah. But our Rashi, I think, has one advantage, meaning we can understand our Rashi, because Rashi adds two words here. What does Rashi say? He doesn't just write that you won't be able to move the kli because it becomes mukta, but Rashi says something else. He says umechabro betit. Now, what does mechabro mean? To what? What is it connected to?
The floor. Makes it,
correct, to the
makes
floor.
Like a
ah, so if it's connected to the floor, then it becomes malachas binyan, right? Why? Because whenever you connect something to karka, that's called Moleches Bona. What do you say, Ben?
Did we had a discussion about it could be the Makar Bapatish is for every of the Lamed Malachot.
Right, there was such a Yerushalmi that seems to,
I don't know if that helps us here or is relevant at all, but
so again, Ben, my subject today is not Moleches Makar Bapatish. I'm just trying to figure out what, according to Rashi, is the nature of this prohibition of being Mevatel Kli Mehechano. And Rashi seems to give us two options, depending on which Rashi you prefer. Both Rashis we thought were very difficult, because Rashi seems to undermine his very principle of Ein Binyan Bekelim. But we could at least justify our Rashi here on Daf Mem Beis Amid Beis, insofar as Rashi adds the two words of Mechabro Betit, which means that we're dealing with Mechubra Lekarka, and then we can raise this Malacha to the level of Moleches Bona. But on the other hand, if Rashi at the end of the Masechta, which he refers to Tosfos, says that it's not attached to Karka, and he makes it impossible to use this Kli, and therefore becomes Moleches Soser, now we're back to the original problem. How do we justify Moleches Soser in the case of a Kli? To the same extent that there's no Binyan Bekelim, there's no Stira Bekelim.
You're reading this into Rashi doesn't use the word Binyan. We're interpreting him to, if he meant that, he could easily have said this is Malacha Binyan, but he doesn't. He says it's tit to the karka. I mean,
it's as if he was mechaber the kli to the karka.
Right, but he's not saying Binyan.
So what is it if not Binyan?
Well, why wouldn't he say Binyan if it was?
Again, Rashi's only interested in explaining.
That's the simple explanation. It's Binyan.
No, again, Rashi is not answering the question which Malach is he violating. Rashi wants to know why did the Rabbanan prohibit this? What's wrong with his action?
Answer is Binyan. That's simple. I understand.
I don't think it's so simple. I mean, you have to tell me why it's Binyan. I mean, just because I put a kli underneath some oil to catch the oil, that's Binyan? You know what I'm saying? That's like the farthest thing in the world from my mind is Binyan. So Rashi has this whole, you know, fantasia here that it's Kilu Chibro Betit. And therefore, you know, you have to understand that Rashi's holding that if the kli is not movable because it became a Basis L'Davrasa and it's Mukta, so you really have to figure this all out. So I'm just suggesting that maybe the reason why Rashi had to be so dramatic here and add and embellish and say it's Keilu Chibro Betid is Rashi wants to show you that when you put something, in this case a utensil, down in a specific place on the ground in such a way that you can't move it. Again, why can't you move it? It's not attached to the ground. But because it's Muktzeh, you can't move it, then what you've done is you virtually, you know, in virtual reality, you have connected it to the ground itself. And that is a classical case of Malachas Bona, when you take something and you connect it to the ground. But I'm just pointing out, I don't think that's going to help us with the Rashi that Tosis quotes, which is the Malacha of Sosa. Let's take a look at Tosis. Tosis says, Mishum de Mechse Kisoser. So Joel, I don't know if I can trouble you to do me a favor. You can either use yours or mine, but if you use mine, it'll be advantageous for me. If you could look up the Rashi that Tosis is referring to, just so that we see it inside. That's what we want to do.
Well,
yes.
The word mechazer, does it mean that it's already signaling us as Rabbanan?
Yes, absolutely. There's no way, no how you can talk about a Doraisa here. In fact, we're going to see that in certain cases, the Rabbanu and Matir, you're allowed to put the Kli in such a way that it'll become Muktza for the sake of saving that oil or whatever the Isle of Beitza that we're going to talk about and so forth. You can't be Matir Malacha Doraisa for that. So Rashi's Mechzeh. And this is very reminiscent of another Rashi. Exactly, excellent. The Rashi at the very beginning of Parakira, where he says that the case of Chazora is Mechzeh Kibbalashel. Thank you so much. So Rashi says, V'dami L'sose, right. V'shuv lo yitlo misham, V'dami Dami L'sose. Good morning, Harvey. How are you today?
Okay.
All right. Now, Rabosai, I want to look at a sugya here on Kuf Chaf Ches Amid Beis. This is a parallel sugya of being Mavatel Kli Mehechano, meaning when you take a Kli and you make it into Muktzah.
Where is this?
Kuf? We're up to Mem Gimel Amid Aleph. Okay, but I'm just going to quote a sugya here on Daf Kuf Chav Ches Amid Beis, 128b. Okay. Omar Rav Yehuda Omar Rav, it's about 10 lines down from the top. Behema Shenofla La'amas Hamayim. So you have the case of an animal that fell into the well, it fell into the water. And the question is, how do you raise the animal up before it drowns? Now, an animal is muktzah on Shabbos. So the question is, are you allowed to bring some sort of a utensil to haul up the animal and save the animal when you're really being mevatel a kli mehechano? What does that mean? You're taking the kli, and then you're going to put the muktzah inside the kli in such a way that the kli itself becomes muktzah. And therefore you took a kli and you mevatel the kli mehechano. So to our surprise, Rabbi Yehuda quotes Rav, who says, Mevi karim uksusos, he brings these couch, these pillows, and cushions, umeniach tachteha, and he puts it underneath the animal, and hopefully the animal will instinctually jump onto these cushions and you'll be able to lift it up. So the Gemara wants to know, is that really permissible on Shabbos? I mean, after all, the Gemara on the first of the wide lines, Vakamavatel Kli Mehechano. In other words, at this point we're saying that since the animal is muktzah, then by taking these cushions and putting them underneath the animal, he's being mevatel the kli meichano, because now the kli itself becomes muktzah, becomes bosis l'dover asur. So how is he allowed to do this? So the Gemara gives a fantastic answer. Listen to this. The Gemara says, mevatel kli meichano dirabbanon, this violation of the bittul hachana sakli is only dirabbanon, as you pointed out, Ben, before. Vitzar balei chayim d'oraisa. Okay, so this is good for the rah 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 for the animals. You know, in America we call it the ASPCA. Every country, I guess, has its own.
PETA.
What's it called here?
PETA. I mean, it's
how do you pronounce it?
PETA.
PETA? Here in Israel, that's what it's called?
No, that's in America.
Oh, in America. Okay, fine.
I don't think they care about it here.
So, Tsar Balei Chaim. He says, Tsar Balei Chaim d'oraisa.
What do you say?
Vi'asi d'oraisa v'dochi d'rabbana.
Harvey, he's quoting from a different Gemara. We'll get back to Mem Gimel in a moment.
Okay.
We're on Mem Gimel, but he's now quoting from... Oh, you have the poof.
So again, the problem here is that I don't know how Steinsaltz puts together a piece of Gemara. So if somebody wants... you bought me a very beautiful gift of a sifter. Maybe you should have bought me a Steinsaltz. Yeah. Now, I'm a little bit allergic to Steinsaltz. I love the man, but the only problem is, if I don't have a Steinsaltz, I can't help Harvey find the place, because it's not the same Tzuris Hadaf. So again, in my Tzuris Hadaf, Harvey, it is the second of the wide lines.
Where? On which?
Yeah. On Kuf Chaf Ches Amid Beis, 128b. Patience are both sides. We get schar for that, right, Ben?
Okay. My father was a doctor, bless his memory. He had a lot of patients.
Very good.
You're talking about here, the animal that fell into the arm of water?
Yeah. I owe you a pun by email.
Yes, I got it.
Oh my gosh.
I loved it. I told it already a few times in your name. It's over, don't be shame. My wife got a kick out of it. Beyond our circumcision. Very good. It's a great life. Okay. So you hear this, Rabosai? This is a brand new principle. This is something that you can really build mountains on. He says, Asi do raisa v'dochi d'rabbana. And a doraisa can overpower and trump a d'rabbana. And in this case, we have a doraisa of Tzar Balei Chaim. We have a d'rabbana of Mevatel Chli Mehechano. And a doraisa could be doche a drabbana, could override a drabbana. Okay, so far so good. Now I have the following question. The Gemara gets into the whole issue of mevatel kli mehechano. No one allows you to take the animal by hand and lift up the animal. You've got to do this whole acrobatic act here in order to get the animal to jump onto the cushions and then lift up the animal. But you're not allowed to lift up the animal directly. And that's because of what?
It's Muktzah.
Which
is a Durabana.
Ah, so Joel asks very well, Muktzah is also a Durabana. If your principle is Asi Doraisa V'dochi Durabana,
you should be allowed to just grab that animal and take it.
Correct. Out. Why do you have to dray around, do it, scratch your ear behind your head and use cushions to get the animal? Why not just haul up the animal? And the only answer I can give to this question is that there are two gradations, two levels of Iser here, even within Drabbanans. In other words, not all Drabbanans
are equal,
right? We usually say, all men were created equal, but in case of Iser Drabbanans, it's not so. And the Iser Drabbanan of Muktzah is what I would call a classical Iser Drabbanan. And we don't violate an Iser Drabbanan for the sake of a Doraisa. And that's why we would not allow you to haul up the animal directly by hand and violate the Iser Muktzah for the sake of Tzar Balei Chaim Doraisa. But we have something that is a little bit lower than a Drabbanan. It's not a full-fledged Iser Drabbanan. And that's called Mevatel Kli Mehechon. That's not a Drabbanan. Muktzah is Drabbanan, but Mevatel Kli Mehechon is what I would call a Shvus. A Shvus means, stay away from it. But it's not a full-fledged violation of an Iser Drabbanan. Muktzah is a violation of an Iser Drabbanan.
It's more, it's an Iser Drabbanan.
The Raisa Vesachnish, there's a Rashi in Beitza that seems with a Meiri, again, we're leaving that as contraband right now because nobody really knows how to say pshat in that Rashi. And I certainly don't. But there is such a thing out there in the universe that maybe Muktzah is d'oraisa. But we don't subscribe to that. I mean, all over the place, the Gemara says Muktzah is the Rabbanan. In fact, at one point, the Gemara calls Muktzah a siyag for hotzah. That if you move things around, eventually you're going to carry them outside and violate the Isra Hotzah. Fine, whatever it is. So, Harvey, you'll have to hold on to that sheet of Muktzah d'oraisa. Right now, we're going to operate with the assumption that Muktzah is d'rabbanan. So now, why is Mevatel Kli Mei Hechano different than violating the Isra Muktzah? Meaning, what's the difference between laying down the cushions and getting the animal or encouraging the animal to jump onto the cushions and taking the animal by two hands and hauling him up or hauling her up? One is muktzah, the other is mevatel kli mechano. But what's the difference conceptually?
Active versus passive.
Sounds good. Ben, I think you're on target here. I wouldn't say passive. Oh, excellent. That's what I like. Okay, so wait, let me tell you what Ben said first and then what he said second and why I like the second one better than the first. The first thing he said was that it's active versus passive. I'm not 100% sure that I'm comfortable with that. There's a lot of truth to it, but the reason why I'm not comfortable with it is because in the case of Mevatel Kli Meichano, he actually takes the kli by hand and puts it in a place where either the oil is going to come in, or the egg is going to roll into the kli, or the animal is going to jump onto the cushions, and so forth and so on. So it's I'm not yet ready to say that that's passive, because he's actively setting up. And I would tell you the following, by the way, that if let's say I have a kli and I see that Moses is about to fall into the kli, I don't have to do anything. I would not have to interfere and move away the kli, because in that case I would be totally passive. And therefore the bittul kli mechano would not relate to me. In Hebrew it would say, Zelo bet yachei selai. Why? Because I did nothing. Here I did something. I set up the kli in a place where the muktzah is going to come into the kli. That I'm not allowed to do. So I'm not yet ready to say that's passive. But now Ben says a second round, hakofa bet. And that's the one I like, because the Torah starts with a bet, right? And that is grama. Why is mevatel kli beichano grama?
Because you're accusing something.
Why? Why isn't that direct? And rather it's an indirect cause.
And the animal may or may not climb on top of it.
Oh, so you're already getting into psigratia already and stuff like that. But let's say I would know 100% Elio Anovi tells me the animal is going to jump on top. I don't think that it's the probability theory that we have to emphasize here. But rather what?
You didn't do anything wrong, but the pillow itself is not muktzah.
Correct. So what sets up the muktzah at the end? The action of the animal. So I only, shall we say, facilitated the animal jumping onto the kli. Or in the case of Shemin, in our Mishnah, I facilitated the Shemin falling into the kli. In the case of Beitza, the Beitza coming into the kli. So in a sense, I'm just setting it up in a place where the muktzah is going to fall in, and that's going to cause bittul kli mechano. But you can't say that I actively took muktzah and threw it into the kli. So if this be the case, Rabosai, we have now, I think, a sugya that should remind us of Daf Lamed Ches Amud Aleph. Let's go back to Lamed Ches Amud Aleph, a little bit of Chazara.
Where?
I can't tell you where it is. I can only tell you it's on Lamed Ches Amud Aleph, Harvey. That's the best I can do for you. Harvey, I think from now on we should sit at the same table. I think that would solve a lot of problems, Harvey. Are you afraid to sit next to me? I won't harm you, I promise. I'll just help you find the place. You found it. Very good. It didn't take you long. Lamed Ches Amud Aleph.
Yes.
The Gemara has a suffix here. Bo minei mirab chiyav ar'ab. On the top of the page. Shochach kidera al gavi kira. So basically, what was violated here? What Isa? Who remembers? Okay, so on Erev Shabbos, he gets a pot on an open fire shahir. And the Gemara wants to know if, as a result of this violation of Shehiyah, the food is cooked, Mahu, are you allowed to enjoy this food? Can you serve it at dinner Friday night or Shabbos lunch? And at the end of the day, the Gemara quotes the answer of Rav of Rav Yosef. This is about five lines down from the top. The Amri Travayu Lehetera, that there's no Iser in the Tavshin. Why? If he went in and cooked something on Shabbos, that's called a Maisa Shabbos, and you're not allowed to eat the benefits and benefit in any way from that cooking. But here is different. Here we're not talking about Mavashel, but rather we're talking about Shehiyah, Shachach v'Shoch. So the Gemara says, Mavashel hu deka'ovid Maisa. In the case of Bishel, he did an action. But here, hi, deloka of it, mice. He didn't do an action. How did the cooking take place? Did he actually put the pot on the fire on Shabbos?
No.
He put the pot on the fire on Erev Shabbos. That's perfectly okay on a Doraisa level, right? And then it cooks by itself on Shabbos. So all he did was set up a Bishel. And that's called Groma. Now for this you have to know a Gemara on Daf Kuf Chaf. Please, Harvey, you don't have to see the Gemara. Just listen to the Gemara. It's one line in the Gemara. Because otherwise we're going to get into deep trouble if we have to look up every single Gemara. It's just one line in the Gemara that I just want you to know that it exists. And the Gemara says the following. That in the case of Shabbos, the Torah says, Lo tase kol melacha. Asiyah hu di asar, grama shari. So please make a note of this Gemara that you should know it exists. This is such a fundamental Gemara. Page Kuf Chaf Amid Beis, towards the bottom of the page. Grama is mutter. So now let's get back to our case. We have two scenarios. We have one scenario where he lifts up the animal directly. That's right. Called a violation of Muktza Biyadayim. And then he has the case where he puts the cushions, and then the animal jumps onto the cushion, and he's being Mavatal the Kli, the cushion Mehechano. That's already Grum. And Grum is a different kind of Avira. For example, we saw in the case of Maisa Shabbos that you're not allowed to eat the Tavshil. In the case of Shehiyah, because it was only Groma, you're allowed to eat the Tavshil. That's Rav and Rav Yosef. And now we could say that the halacha of Asi Da'oraisa V'dachi D'Rabbanan, which is established on Kuf Chav Chesam and Beis, that will allow you to put the cushions in such a way that you can haul up the animal when it jumps on the cushions, that's going to be a different kind of a D'Rabbanan. That's not a shvus of a violation of a D'Rabbanan. That's already a shvus because it looks like a malacha. What malacha does it look like? Well, Rashi here says it looks like boneh. Rashi there says it looks like soser. Whatever it is, it's mechse kimalacha. But it's not a full-fledged avera. This is not a violation of a D'Rabbanan. And this is fascinating to me because what we're saying now is that in the world of Hilchos Shabbos, we have different levels of Isurim, and they shouldn't all be defined or classified b'mikshachas as one entity in a uniform way. They're not uniform. They're different one from the other. I'll give you an example. Moshe Lamad over Doma. There's a famous tshuva of Rabbi Kiveger about someone who's Mechal Shabbos D'Rabbanan. In other words, he keeps the Doraisas, but the Rabbanans he's lax about. And Rabbi Kiveger wants to know what's his status as far as what's called a Mumar is concerned. Because a Mechal Shabbos is a Mumar. But this guy is in a twilight zone state. Not very clear. He's in the gray area. On the one hand, he doesn't desecrate the Shabbos on a Doraisa level, but on the other hand, he desecrates Shabbos on a D'Rabbanan level. Should we call him a Mumar? D'Rabbanan, should we call him a Mumar?
Tamil Chachim, you can call him.
You're right. Now, Rabbi Kiveger differentiates between different kinds of Isuri D'Rabbanan. There's something called a violation of an Isur D'Rabbanan on Shabbos, and there's something called a Shmus. A Shmus means Archaka. You know, where you...
Protected,
right? You put up a fence and you say, don't do this because it might lead to that. But it's not at all similar to a malacha. And that's already a different kind of an Issa D'Rabbanan. It's already a Shvus. But here, in our case of Mevatel Kli Meichana, we have a Shvus B'Shei B'Altas, meaning a Shvus B'Grom. So even if I were to grant you that being Mevatel Kli Meichana is Mechzik Kibona, Mechzik Soser, it still is a Groma kind of situation. And if it it is a groma, I'm saying absolutely it's groma. And if it's groma, then we could treat it in a different way. And Gemara says like the following, that we would not allow you to violate Mukta, which is a full fledged Issa D'Rabbanan on Shabbos, for the sake of Tzar Balei Chaim Doraisa, but will allow you to violate the Iser of Bitul Kli Mehechano, because that's only groma, for the sake of Tzar Balei Chaim Doraisa.
How is the animal steps on the pillow trying to get out? Is the pillow mixed for the rest of Shabbos, or just when the animal's on it?
For that, you have to know a sugya called Yesh Muktzah L'Chatzi Shabbos or Ein Muktzah L'Chatzi Shabbos. Meaning, if something became Muktzah Erev Shabbos, then even if you remove, but if something became Muktzah on Shabbos, right, then what happens if you remove the Muktzah? If the Muktzah falls off or whatever happens? So that's a plugta in the Gemara.
I'm just saying a dog sits on a chair and then gets off the chair. Now that chair smokes it for the rest of Shabbos. That doesn't make sense. Hmm. But that, what's the internet?
I don't know. You have to know exactly what the status of a... is it a domestic animal? Is it a wild animal? Again, I don't know. You know, that Joel will hopefully remind me and we'll try to get to it if we can.
Okay.
Yeah. No, not that it's too practical. It's just that it's a little bit beyond, you know, it's a little bit advanced.
Rambrizo?
Yeah.
I found a little... problematic to compare this to Shahia, because she had a two-part process. Putting it down is one thing, but the second part is not removing it when you should. It kind of had that two-step process, which you don't really have with the other scenario of the animal kind of doing one thing.
So which of the two cases do you think is more chomer, like is closer to an actual meisah? Just like, I'm trying to tune into what you're saying.
I'm saying when you're trying to make comparison between scenarios, there should be enough common ground. It seems like it's difficult to compare to Shia because it has a second element, part A and part B. Whereas the animal, you just, one thing.
So wouldn't it be even less than Shia? I mean, in the case of Shia, you actually put the pot on the fire. You didn't do it on Shabbos. That's already almost a Maisa Bishul. But here, you know, it's not like you put Muktzah into the Kli. You put the Kli in a place, in a location where Muktzah is going to fall into the Kli. So that certainly is grum. Now, this sugya that we looked at before, Kuf Chaf Ches, is a sugya in Perek Mefanin. Okay, that's in the 18th Perek. Now, in the back of the regular classical Shas, we have a riff on Perek Mefanin, and they added a bunch of super commentaries around the riff. The one that I'm interested in is the Shiltei HaGiborim. So I'm just going to give you a very quick synopsis of what he says. He says the following, that in a case where the only way he could get the animal out of the well or wherever it fell into, the Amas HaMayim, before it dies, is by literally, directly hauling it up, he's allowed to do so. Now, it comes out, according to the Shiltei Giborim, that there are two halachas. There's one halacha of lechatchila, you know, if all things are equal, the ideal. And then what method should we use to save the animal? The cushions, which is mevatel kli meichano. If that alternative is not available, then we're going to allow you to violate the Issur Muktzah. So it's a funny kind of structure according to the Shiltei Giborim. I mean, manavshah, if you're applying the principle of osi d'oraisa v'dochi d'rabbanan, even for Muktzah, then why not allow him from the get-go to lift up the animal, be a dying? And I think what the answer is what we said before, that there are two levels of an Issur D'Rabbanan. There's Muktzah, and there's Mevatel Kli Meichano. Muktzah.
A question which is the effect of all the animal's distress.
Yeah.
The more distressed the animal is, the more you can alleviate his distress. So you might pluck him out if you can see he's
maybe
really
you're right.
hurting.
Maybe you're right. Hear what he's saying. He's saying, forget about whether the animal's life is in the balance. Maybe just to reduce the stress of the animal, the distress of the animal also. But I'm just pointing out here that I think what we find in the Shilta Giborim is a very fine proof to our distinction between Mukta and Mevatel Kli Meichano. Because at first glance, the Shilta Giborim makes no sense. We might have shock. If you're willing to violate and override the Isur Mukta, as in the Rabbanim, for the sake of Tzar Balei Chaim Dorais, so why do you play games here and tell me, go find the cushions and haul them up with this and be Mevatel Kli Meichano, and that will allow? Why not just straight away allow violation of the Isur Mukta? And the answer is that we don't want you to violate the Rabbanon. What we don't mind is, in this case, to violate a grama on the Rabbanon. So we have a whole new definition, and that's going to be Mevatel Kli Meichano. But if your push comes to shove, and then you have no other option, then of course, according to Shilta Giborim, at least you're going to be allowed to be. Now, I wanted to look up this halach in the Rambam. Of course, I forgot the Rambam. Maybe we have a Rambam here. Harvey, your Rambam is probably here. If not, just it's the blue. It's the blue Rambam.
Which one?
Hilchas Shabbos.
Yes.
Okay. I'm just going to read to you the language of the Shilta Giborim. He says, it says, Hitiru Isur Zeh Shel Divrei Sofer Mipnei Isur Torah. That's a okay. So we don't have a Rambam here. I'll just read to you what I have here in the Hare Kedem, quoting the Rambam. He says, "Behema." This is Perek Chafei Mihulcha Shabbos Halacha Chavav. Later on in Mitzvah Shem, we'll get a Rambam. Behema shenofla lebar ola amas hamayim im yachol liten la parnasa bimkoma. Meaning if the animal is hungry because it's stuck there, you'll haul it out after Shabbos, but in the meantime you can feed the animal, then feed the animal and then take the animal after Shabbos and haul it up. Im lav, if the animal is in very great distress now because you can't feed the animal, he says, mevi karim uksusos umeiniach tachteha ve'olsa, and then she the afal piece, says the Ram Shem Avatil Klimei Chano, Sharei Mashlicho Libar Letoch Hamayim. He's now throwing it into the bar. Mipnei Tzar Balei Chaim Lo Gozru. The Osir Lahalosa Biyado. So the Ram says explicitly he's not allowed to take the animal and haul it up with his hands. In other words, the Ram is not like the Shilta Giborim who says that if you have no other option, then will allow you to violate mukta and pull up the animal with your hands. No, the Rambam says without qualification, osur lahalosa biyado. And again, you'll ask me the following question: why can't we be matir the isur mukta? If a doraisa overrides the rabbanon, then we should be matir an isur mukta. And that's what we come back to say, that Mevatel Kli Meichano has a status of its own. It's a new kind of a shvus of being Mevatel Kli Meichano, even though it's grama and is not a mice. But that's already a, so to speak, a lower level kind of a shvus. So that kind of shvus, we could be docha with Tzar Bal Chaim, but not a real full-fledged Yisud Rabbanon of Mukta.
So that phrase, that Aseh is docha, the Rabbanon, is only the minimum of the Rabbanon.
Correct. We're not going to walk out of here and come to the conclusion that for every sake of a Doraisa, I can violate a Dorabanon. That's a, if there was such a klal, we would have known about it. It's not, you know, you don't have to get to page 128 in Masechta Shabbos to know about that. but rather this is a very unique case because it's called Mevatel Kli BeHeichano, which is a new kind, a category of Shmus that's B'Shevi Altas, and that's indirect, that you're not really actively destroying the Kli, to use Rashi's term.
It seems like Rambam was adding, he added more instead of just Amar Aman, he added different, not just the pillows, but also Ksuk. Is he combining different sugyas, or he's giving other examples?
Right, because the Gemara itself has these two cases. Now, why does the Gemara have these two cases?
I recall only Amat Amar.
The Gemara says, why does the Rambam mention Bor?
Is adding Ksuk as opposed to just pillows? I'm just curious.
Again, I don't have a Rambam in front of me, but I'm sure if you look in what's called the Ha'aretz V'Tziyunim, which is on the side of the Rambam, he tells you where the Rambam got his language from.
Might be combining a different subject.
Sure, the Rambam does that all the time. He has Yerushalmis, he has Sifris, Makultas. I mean, the Rambam had an amazing library in front of him. And it was all manuscripts. They did this before the printing press. But they've proven that the language of the Rambam indicates that he had ancient texts that only someone with a fantastic library could have had. Now, Rav Osa, what I'd like to do is let's go back to Rava. We've been talking a lot about Rav Yosef. Let's go back to Rava. So we're on now Mem Beis Amid Beis. And if somebody can help Harvey find it, Mem Beis Amid Beis. See if you can find it. All right. So Omar Rav Chisda, let's just go over it one more time. Right after the Mishnah, Afal Pishomu ain't nostin kli takas tarnagolis lekalo beit sasa, amal kofa oleha kli shaloti shaver. So you're allowed to take a kli and cover the egg so that it shouldn't be
broken.
It shouldn't be smashed, right? It shouldn't be broken. And according to Rav Yosef that we just learned, it's beautiful because if you take the kli and you receive the egg in the kli, that's called Mevato Kli Meichano. But if you cover the egg with a kli, then the kli is not immovable. On the contrary, it's movable, and therefore you're not being Mevato Kli Meichano. But Rava comes up with a whole nother approach, and he says, Omer Rava, my time with Rav Chisda, why does Rav Chisda make this distinction between between setting up the kli underneath the beitza and covering the beitza? Because savar tarnagolis asuya lahatil beitzasa ba'ashpa ve'ena asuya lahatil beitzasa makom madron hatzola mitzuya hitiru vatzola she'ena mitzuya lo hitiru. So we have situations where we can anticipate that the object is going to get destroyed. It's going to get probably, or in very strong likelihood, it'll get lost, it'll get destroyed. And that's called mitsuya. And then we have situations where you don't anticipate that that's going to happen. That's eina mitsuya. And under what circumstances are they going to be matir to put this kli in a way that it'll protect the mukta from getting destroyed? That's only in the case of Atzola Mitsuya. But if it's Eina Mitsuya, then we're not going to allow it. Now, let's get a little background here. What are we being matir? So if you go back to the Rashi on the Mishnah, Rashi says, Kasavar, this is line 4 in the Mishnah of Rashi, Ein Kli Nital B'Shabbos El-Tzor Tomar Nital. You're only allowed to move a Kli for the purpose of something that's movable. That's how Rashi learns it. And he repeats himself here in the sugya, the Gemara itself, when he says, Hatsola Mitsuya Hitiru Litaltel Kli Litzarka, for the sake of saving this object which is in itself Mukta Afalpi Shabetza Dover She'eno Nital B'Shabbos. So again, for the sake of Hatzola, we're going to allow you to move a kli to protect mukta, to save the mukta from destruction, but only if that Hatzola is what? Mitsuya. But if it's Eina Mitsuya, you can go Madron, And Rashi now, if you take a look, Dibra Maslein Mitzuya adds with Tiftuf de Shemen de Maslisen. In the case of Tiftuf Shemen, in all probability, he would have protected his oil, Shalom Aleichem, from the get-go, which means either he would have made sure that there's not too much oil that would spill over, or alternatively, he would have already set up a system before Shabbos to accept to receive the oil. That's called Hatzolah Sheina Mitzuya. It could be that, you know, it could be that the very fact that he should have anticipated this danger to the loss of oil, then that means it's already Eina Mitzuya. But we would have expected him and demanded of him that he would have set up a system whereby he would protect the oil from getting destroyed. And therefore, we're not going to go ahead and be matir to use a kli which is nital for the sake of a davar she'eino nital in a case where he should have anticipated that, taken precautions. That makes him to tzol she'eino mitzuya. But in a case where, you know, this happened, and it's quite likely or probable that it would happen, that's called Hatzolah Mitzuya, and then we're allowed to do this. Now, I want to analyze this sugya if I can, but first I want to point out to you that Tosus seems to have a different approach to this sugya. Okay, this is Tosus Dima Maskel Hatzolah. Now, before we get to Tosus Hatzol, let's just read another few lines of the Gemara. Esve Abaye raises the following objection to Rabba Hatzol Shein Mitzuya Lohi Tiru. Are you telling me that if it's not probable, it's not likely, and it wasn't anticipated, then we're going to get strict, and we're not going to allow Hatzol of Asani? We have a price that says Nishpra lo chavis shel tevel b'rosh hagag, rosh gago, mevi kli umeniach tachtel. Okay, so what's going on over here? Now, we all know what tevel is, but let's just go over the basics. Let's say he has grapes that grow in Eretz Yisrael, and when he cuts down, he harvests these grapes, he's chayav in trumas and maestras. Until he removes trumas and maestras, what's the status of the grapes?
Tevel.
And tevel is a very strong, very severe isur achila. It's not an isur anov, but an isur achila. And what he needs to do is to be mafresh trumas and maestras. So far he hasn't done so. He sends these grapes to the press, presses the grapes, and he ends up with wine, yayin. This yayin is yayin shel tevel. The yayin is now stored in a barrel. He puts the barrel up on the roof. In the meantime, he hasn't taken away trumas and maestras. He will separate trumas and maestras in the future, but in the meantime, what happens is the barrel that's holding on to the wine of tevel breaks, it cracks, and the wine is spilling. And it's coming down from the roof. It's not rain. You know, you don't mind if the rain gets lost, but the wine is very valuable to him. So the Bryce establishes that he's allowed to take a kli and place it in such a way that the wine will, again, I'll just give you one example of wine. It could be many other examples, right? It could be oil. That the wine will be collected and saved in the receptacle. So the question is, Ein kli nital ella l'tzorech dovra nital. And tevel is not called a dovar nital. I'm not exactly sure why. Rashi gives his explanation that it's not roi l'achila, because as long as it's tevel, so you're not allowed to eat it. Even a kohen is not allowed to eat it, and therefore it has the status of muktzah.
It's a forbidden food,
right? So I'm not sure that every forbidden food is muktzah by definition. For example, you can have the following two categories. You can have a food that's forbidden forever and ever, and it'll always be also. There's nothing you can do to change it. And then you could have a food where you can do an action, and through that action, the food changes its status from Isur to Heter, what would be such an isur? What would be an example of such an isur?
Tevel.
Because tevel is roi lafrasha. So although it's true that right now I can't eat the tevel, but all I have to do is take off truma and take off maisa, then I can eat this. It's no longer tevel. It becomes chulin. Yeah, Tzvi?
Can that be done anywhere in the process? Meaning either at the fruit, the wine, or once the wine's on
someone's table? Oh man, you're asking very, very fundamental questions, and you have to know it's roim for that. But let's assume that hafrashas trumas and maisas requires the shem tevel, and the shem tevel is chal after what's called gmar molocha. So what you do is you have to, let's say in the case of grains, you know, you cut down the wheat and then you have to do what's called zriya, which doesn't mean planting, it's the zayin resh yud yud hey, which means winnowing, and you might need what's called achnosas pnei abayis, riyas pnei abayis, means you have to take it into the house. So a lot of different preconditions here. For example, in the case of challah, the shein tevel is probably chal after what's called gibul, which means after you knead it, with a k at the beginning. But after you pour the water into the flour, even before gibul, you might be able to be mafrish chal. So it's complicated, because I would have said there's no mafrish chal until after the shein tevel. And that's really what happens in Trumas and Maestros. But there are cases where you could be mafresh something even very early, and possibly even before the Shem Tevel is chal. But be that as it may, do you agree with me on this point? This is the main point for our purposes. Namely, that Tevel is roi l'achila. It's not mutar b'achila now, but it's roi l'achila al yidei hafrasha. And therefore, I'm not sure I understand very well why tevel is mukt.
You can't do it on Shabbos.
Excellent. So probably the answer to this problem, what Dr. Joel points out, is that there are banon prohibited hafrashas trumas of maisers on Shabbos. So therefore, he's in a no-win situation. For the course of this Shabbos, there's no way that the tevel could be edible. Now again, I find a little bit difficult, because that only really separates me from the possibility of being mafresh the tevel. But the tevel itself is roi l'achila al yidei afrasha. I can't be mafresh. Yeah, at what point do you say, well, the tevel is roi l'achila, it's edible. I mean, it's perfectly edible. Biologically, it's edible. But I can't implement that hafrasha, and I'm prevented from doing so because of an isad rabbanon that was imposed on me. So I find this very complicated, but that's not for us now. The bottom line for our purposes today, and we'll see about tomorrow, what tomorrow will bring, because tomorrow might bring us to this whole question of exactly why tevel is mukta. But tevel is mukta. And now to save the tevel when the barrel breaks on the roof and put a kli there would be a hatzola of a dover anital litzora dover sheino nital. Now you can always answer, well, we're talking about Hatzola, and Hatzola is Mutter. Yeah, but it has to be Hatzola Mitsuya. Did he anticipate the probability of his barrel breaking? You know, I'd like to think he should use solid barrels, you know, send them to the, what's it called in the factories, you know, where they test the thing to make sure it doesn't...
quality care.
Is that what it's called?
Quality assurance.
Yeah, there was you remember the famous case in American history about a Coca-Cola bottle that burst, and he was suing the Coca-Cola company. You remember this? This is when I was a kid. So the question is, was the Coca-Cola company responsible? They were negligent because they sold him a bottle that would burst. You know, because what the factories have to do is they have to check out their commodities before they sell it to make sure it doesn't burst. You know, sometimes if something bursts, it can be very dangerous. And sometimes it just doesn't function. Right? So they test it out. So I assume that he tested out his barrel, and he found that it was a healthy barrel. Maybe he gave it a couple of knocks with his fist, you know, and it didn't break. So this is Hatzol She'ena Mitzuya, and yet nevertheless, for the sake of Hatzol, we're going to allow it. So the Gemara could have started, splitting hairs. You know, maybe a beitza, an egg is not worth that much, but the wine in his barrel is worth home to our phone. It's so expensive, we have to allow it. But instead, the Gemara says, no, this is a case of Mitzuya. Why? Begulfe charite. Now, I can translate these words for you, but it's not going to help me because I basically just conceptually, the Gemara is saying the case was that these are barrels that you can anticipate will break. I don't understand the physics of it, but the Gemara says that these are new barrels. New barrels that have not yet been strengthened. So shchiche de pake. You know, it's quite probable. Again, I don't know what the probability theory is. If it's 20% or 30%, I don't know what it is. That they will crack. And therefore, we're allowed to move a kli for the purpose of saving mukta if it's shchiach. And this is called shchiach. Shchiach means it can be anticipated. So let's go back now to Tosfos Divrei Maskil Hatzola, which is on Mem Beis Amud Beis. And Tosfos says the following. Pirush Bekudris, when it says Hatzol She'eno Mitzuya Lo Itiru L'Dover She'eno Nital V'Goras V'Ahi D'Parach Abayi, and the question of Abayi Mino B'Somuch, that Abayi is going to ask a question on Rabba, Nishbara Lo Chavis Shal Tevel B'Rosh Gago. And that's the gears that we have, correct? Nishbar lo chavish al tevel. Apparently there's another girsa which says nishbar lo chavis. And it doesn't say the word tevel, but Rashi has the word tevel. And tevel is eno nital, which means tevel is mukt. V'kasha l'riva, de'i garis bar tevel, amai parach l'rav Yosef, mibraisa acheres, etc., etc. Okay, we don't have to know all of this, but he says, Mash behedge the logars braisa tevel. He has a girsa without the word tevel. The lobishal tevel, Myri. We're not even talking about a case of tevel. We're talking about chulin, regular wine. The katani seifin is damdalo orchim, maybe kli acher. Okay, so if we're not talking about tevel, then what is going on over here? What is the reason why I would hesitate allowing someone to put a kli to receive the wine if the wine is not mukta? And why is it? Oh, maybe it's uvda chol. I don't know. Let's see what Tosfos has to say before we get to uvda chol. But what's the problem here of saving wine? And for that matter, saving an egg in the case of madron, which we said is lo shchichi, if the egg wouldn't be mukta, because he's taking out the word tevel here, so we're not talking about mukta. V'nirlo lefarish, he quotes the Riva, dehatzola she'ena mitzuya lo hitiru litroach. Please underline that word litroach. Bechol davar, afilu b'davar anital, mishum tirch. So there's a radical difference here between Tosfos and Rashi. Rashi is learning this whole sugya revolves around the issue of moving a kli, which is a davar anital, for the sake of saving a davar she'eno nital. Tosfos, forget about she'eno nital. We don't want to do any atzol on Shabbos, because any atzol on Shabbos is going to be considered what? Tircha. What's tircha?
Any type of effort.
Effort. It's a lot of work. Imagine if we're going to tell you on Shabbos, run around saving everything that's, you know, in danger, any object that might get destroyed. That already is, I guess, you know, Joel would call it uvdu dechol. I'm going to avoid those terms because I don't know what they mean. If I'd rather stick to Tosfos' language, but tirch. Okay, then, so we have a whole new ball game here, according to Tosfos. We're no longer talking about moving a utensil for the sake of mukta. And by the way, Tosfos seems to assume that tevel would be mukta. That's not going to help me, because I don't understand yet exactly why tevel is mukta. But nevertheless, we're not talking about tevel here. We're talking about hatzola. And hatzola is tirch. And we don't want to allow tirch. Yeah, I was wondering, you know, people move furniture on Shabbos. because some people, I had a member of my family who, you know, she had to move furniture. That was her thing. You know, I don't know if you know it, but every few minutes, like, you know, we got to rearrange the furniture. Yeah, so now technically, you're allowed to do that on Shabbos. There's no muksa, and you're not carrying it out into Rishus HaRav, so there's no melechas hotzah. But I don't know. I just, you know, now that I think about it, Lamafreyas, you know, I'm going back to my childhood, but was it the right thing, you know, to spend the whole Shabbos moving furniture? So Hatzolah apparently is something that, you know, could really swallow up your time and your energies and run around seeing things that are precarious, that positions are precarious, and go around saying, that's called tircha. We don't want to allow tircha. When do we allow tircha? Mitsuya. When it's mitsuya, meaning that you know,
it's prime time.
Yeah, there's a certain probability that it's going to happen, and for the sake of Hatzolah, we're going to laugh.
Yeah, I was just thinking that there's an Easter of Hachana on Shabbos for Motzei Shabbos. So a frum Jew, I'm going to save the tevel now, the wine, so because Motzei Shabbat, I'm going to mafrish. You're kind of making a Hachana, you're taking a step that's going
to
be...
So if you'd like to give some Rashi, so Ben is asking, forget about Ein Kli Nital, Tzor Tov Nital, isn't it also B'Torah Sachon? That's your question. Would that be Hachon? Okay, because since he can't eat the tevel today, because there's an Isra Afrash on Shabbos, is saving the tevel today is hachana for both Shabbos. Okay, good question. I don't know. That's already throws in another variable into the equation.
But there's a problem of damage, remember. Assuming you had a barrel that broke,
right,
and the wine was pouring from your roof down and could damage your furniture, for example. You're saving quite a lot of loss.
We've been talking about saving the wine. You're talking about saving the furniture. It might get ruined by the wine. You know?
Good question. Like, what's being damaged?
Okay. Now, Rabosai, before we leave, I want to tell you that this concept of Hatzolah is a sugya on Daf Kuf Yud Zayin. Okay, so we're going to try to point out the sugya. This is going to be your... Felin Eddie, your homework assignment for tomorrow, the Sugyan Kuf Yud Zayin. We have many cases where, let's say, a fire, Chas V'Shalom, breaks out. What are you allowed to salvage? What are you allowed to save and protect from the fire? Are you allowed to save goods by taking them out of the house and bringing them into what's called a carmelis on Shabbos? And that's a place where you're not allowed to take things into there on Shabbos because of a Darabonin called carmelis. The Gemara speaks here on Daf Kuf Yud Zayin about saving a Sefer Torah in the case of a fire. And what about on the third line from the top, Matzil and Tik Shel Sefer Torah? You know, once you allow me to save the Sefer Torah, would you allow me to save the, we call it a mantle, you know, the covering over the Sefer Torah? And the Gemara wants to know what happens if by saving the mantle you're going to move mukta because there are most that are inside the mantle. I don't know exactly how they sewed it in or whatever they did. This is the whole sugya here on Daf Kuf Yud Zayin called the sugya of Hatzolah. What are you allowed to salvage and save on Shabbos? Now keep in mind, this sugya is not addressing mukta. We're not talking about mukta here. There's no breath here, no whispering about mukta here. We're talking about Hatzolah. Now, what's the reason why Chazal were a little bit hesitant, or shall we say inhibited, about allowing Hatzolah? So Tosa said because of what?
Tircha.
There's a Ramban here on Daf Kuf Yud Zayin. I'm going to read to you a few lines in the Ramban. And he throws in a whole different monkey wrench into the equation. And we're not dealing with tircha. That's not the issue. We're dealing with something called Adam Bahul Al Mamona, which means that a person gets totally, you know, he gets overwhelmed. He loses his shfuyas das. How do you say his
perspective, his balance?
You get the point, but there's a word I'm looking for which doesn't come to me. He loses his calm and he's no longer, you know, thinking all about it, and he might do wild things. The Gemara seems to assume he might even bring Kalim from one Rishus to the other. So in the case of a Sefer Torah, maybe we were more permissive and liberal about Hatzolah, because of the sefer, maybe even the tikshel sefer. That's one kind of hatzolah. But in classical hatzolah, we have to worry about Adam Bahul Al-Mamot. So the Ramban is going to make a connection between Kuf Yud Zayin and our sugya here on Mem Gimel. And he says the following. Vitema. Okay, Belinetta will see this inside. Davar Roy Amai Lo, he assumes like Tosfos, that even if it's not Tevel, that's his girsa, you're not allowed to, except for Hatzol Metsuya, but as a general rule, we're not going to be very excited about placing a kli and receiving the yayin that's coming down. Even though, again, it's not yayin shel tevel, it's yayin shel chulin. And he says, tema, why is that prohibited? Says the Ramban, right here on Daf Mem Gimel, and maybe you'll find it in your Gemara on the bottom there. Maybe he quotes this Ramban. See if you find any quote of the Ramban. He says, "Ikal Amemar." When the Ramban says "Ikal Amemar," you see that he's struggling. You know, he's coming up with a new chiddush. Maybe you could say, you know, the Ramban is Mishum de Bechol Hatzola Ikal Amechish. We have to worry about the same chashash of Hahi the Amrina Beperek called Kisvei, here on Daf Kuf Yud Zayin, and by the way, the sugi goes on Tomid Beis here about Matzilin Muslim Gimel Sudos, that maybe will allow him to save food, so he'll have food for three meals, and the Gemara goes on to say that Mitok Shadum Bol Al Mamono Ishar Slei, if you allow him, he might come to put out the fire. The Gemara doesn't like that possibility. Maybe he'll come to take Kalim from one Rishus to another Rishus. Says the Ramban, Ikal Meimar. What we're learning here on Daf Mem Gimel, Mem Beis Amid Beis to be more precise, is Mishum DeBechol Hatzola. Okay, Chol Hatzola means we're not dealing with Mukta here. Bechol Hatzola, Ikal Meichesh. We have to be concerned. Lahi the Amrinon, the Perikol Kisvei, that's Kuf Yud Zayin Amid Beis. Shemitok Shadam Bol Al Mamono Isharisle. If you allow him to get involved in Atzola when his mamon is in danger, Osi he'll come La Suye Kalim to bring Kalim Derech Rishus Arab. Notice maybe he has Kalim that he needs to receive and protect whatever is about to be lost. So for the sake of Atzola, he desperately needs Kalim. And the Kalim are in another Rishus, and he's going to have to carry him through Rishus Arabim to bring it here. Or maybe he'll appoint someone else, you know, and his neighbors, or whoever might get involved in this. And therefore, we have a problem. Now, he adds another line here, which I don't understand, because for that you have to really be a baki in the sugi of Atzola. And he says, "Afal pichein mishum ibud mamon hitiru bekli echad." So they're going to give him a very limited shot at hatzolah. They're going to allow him to do hatzolah bekli echad. Again, I don't know what that's all about. That's going to be hopefully clear tomorrow. And this is what the Gemara says over here in Rabbah's frame of reference here on Mem Beis Amid Beis, that the whole heter of hatzolah, whenever the heter of hatzolah applies, is rak b'hatzolah mitzuya. If it's hatzolah mitzuya, then they're going to allow him with those limitations and restrictions to do a hatzolah. But for lo b'hatzolah she'ena mitzuya. But if it's hatzolah she'ena mitzuya, then we go back to the general iser hatzolah, and this is no longer an exception to that rule of hatzolah. And the Rabbanan said, we're not going to allow you to get involved in hatzolah because Adam Bol Al Mamono, he's so concerned with saving his moment, who knows what he's going to do out of desperation. He may even bring Kalim from another Rishus into Rishus Arab. So Rabbosai, now we have three different Gedarim, or three different definitions or categories regarding this prohibition that we're dealing with, of taking a kli and putting it under the hen and making sure that the egg is protected, or under the shemen, or under the or under the ayin shel Sheltevel. Or forget about Yayin Sheltevel. Yayin in general. So one understanding is Rashi's understanding, and that's Ein Kli Nital El Tzarek Dovra Nital. And we're dealing with the Dovra Sheino Roy Lital, which means it's Muktzah. And now you're moving something for the sake of Muktzah that you can't do, unless for the sake of Hatzolah Mitzuya. Then we have Tosfos Shita, that to allow you to do this act of Hatzolah entails a certain element of Tircha, and because of Tircha, the Rabbanan said it's not allowed except for the case of Hatzolah Mitzuya. And now we have the Rabban Shita, that this Sugya has nothing to do with Muktzah, and not only that, it's not, as Tosfos would say, because of Tircha, forget about Tircha, but rather it comes under this gzera of Yisra Hatzolah because of Adam Baal HaMamono, and we're afraid who knows what he's going to do in this state of Baal. You know, Baal, he's totally preoccupied.
You want to apply this to our Mishnah of the dish under the candle? He's going to get a Baal?
No, it's a separate Yisra Hatzolah. Do you follow, Joel? Well, what's happening here is that we have an Yisra Hatzolah moment on Shabbos. We're not going to... There are 50 million questions you could ask about the details and the minutia. How much is it worth? Why is it going to get Bahol? You know, you could add a whole bunch of variables. But the bottom line is...
apply it to this Mishnah.
That's what I'm saying. You could find, some logical reasons to limit the Yisra Hatzolah and say it shouldn't apply in this case, it shouldn't apply in our Mishnah, and so forth and so on. But the Ramban is not willing to do so. The Ramban is claiming, and that's what we want to analyze tomorrow, Mitzvah Shem, is that there's an Yisra Hatzolah moment on Shabbos. Whenever you allow someone to save his property on Shabbos, there's got to be a loophole in the law. It's got to be some sort of exceptional, you know, there'll be strict conditions that have to be met in order to allow Hatzolah. And Chazal, as a general rule, prohibit Hatzolah. It's a very interesting concept, you know. It's a little bit similar to Ben Yoh HaChana business, but what it means is that your mind on Shabbos is not on your mama. You know, you're in a spiritual state. Again, this is, I'm just giving a little bit of, Shlomo Kalbach kind of stuff, you know what I mean? Holy brother. But what I mean is, that's your mental state on Shabbos. You know, for example, you'll see in Shulchan Aruch, it says you shouldn't go out to the fields on Shabbos, even you don't do anything, just to see, is it growing, you know? That's not Shabbistic, you know? And there's an Yisra Hatzolah on Shabbos. You're not involved in saving your moment on Shabbos. Under certain conditions, very strict conditions, they allowed it. Muslim Gimel Sudos, Sefer Torah, maybe even a Tikshel Sefer Torah, Sefer Kodesh in certain cases. And now we're having something called Mitsuya, a whole new category. But the Ramban is saying that the restrictions that apply to Hatzolah will apply here as well, because our sugya is a sugya of Hatzolah. That's very interesting, because according to the Ramban, how could I ever learn Membeis Amid Beis if I never got to Kuf Yud Zayin Amid Beis? It's like, you know, they really pull the wool over our eyes over here. Like, I'm not even, you know, I didn't get to 42B, and you're hitting me with a sugya on 117B. And the Ramban is claiming if you don't know the sugya on 117B, you don't know anything about the sugya on 42B. It's like, you know, this means you have to know everything to know anything. You know, that's the bottom line according to the Ramban. So we have these three approaches. So for tomorrow, Rabbo, say, here's your homework assignment. First of all, we want to look at Kuf Chaf Ches. Remember the sugya on Kuf Chaf Ches. Who can remember what we saw in Kuf Chaf Ches?
Is that where he mentioned Sfira instead of...
Tzar Bali Chaim, you said? What did you say?
Sorry. I'm just confused with the...
Yeah, so we want to look at the sugya of Tzar Bali Chaim. Okay, we want to look at the Rambam that I mentioned to you before. And basically we want to look now on Membeis Amid Beis at the Ramban, with the Yisra Hatzolah that's based on Kuf Yud Zayin Amid Beis, and that's what we want to believe now to try to understand tomorrow. Okay, then?
Quite a shot to that.
Okay.
You do this every single